Some of you have heard me share this story before, but I love it so much I don't want to miss an opportunity to share it. It's a story about the man whose mother had been on his mind, so he gave her a call. "Hi, Mom. How you doing? How are things down in Florida?" "Not so good," she said. "Well, what do you mean, not so good?" "Well, it's all right. It's nothing." "Come on, Mom, you wouldn't say things were not all right if things were..." "Yeah, is there something wrong here?" She said, "I'll be all right, Lord willing." You say, "Well, what's the matter?" "I've been weak." "For how long have you been weak?" She says, "Oh, I don't know. I've been weak for as long as I could remember." "Well, why are you weak?" "I haven't eaten in 40 days." "Well, why haven't you eaten in 40 days? That's terrible." She said, "It's because I did not want my mouth to be full in case my son should call." Jewish mothers, but not just Jewish mothers. I had a former parishioner who was a master of metaphors, who sometimes said that his mother was a travel agent for guilt trips. So whether it's one form of guilt or another, we can all recall times when Mom has done something like that, maybe well-intentioned, but it just rubbed us the wrong kind of way. But mothers aren't the only ones who are good at it, because some churches are good at it too, and especially around stewardship time. May I be honest with you? I do not like stewardship time. I never have. It isn't that I don't think that stewardship is important. It's vitally important. How we manage and how we share our resources is an indicator of our trust in God. I have no compulsion about asking for money. I never do it apologetically. But my problem is with the method. I do not like gimmicks. I do not like dog and pony shows. I do not like bait and switch tactics. I do not like the latest mailing that comes across my desk guaranteeing dramatic increases in your church's giving if you will only purchase this program, along with all the testimonies from Reverend Tom H. or Reverend Bill B., best program they've ever had. I don't like that. I don't like campaigns. I don't like drives. Cars are for driving, not churches. Because what it all boils down to the person in the pew, is simply, okay, they're asking again for money, our money. It'll be a wonderful day when stewardship efforts aren't necessary, because we will already be supporting the church in a good way. It will be a great day when we give with glad and generous hearts, simply because we recognize that giving is an integral aspect of being a Christian. But that day isn't coming anytime soon, and I know that, and you know that. There are churches, believe it or not, that do not have stewardship drives. They are necessary because the members of those churches understand right from the very beginning that to be a part of this Christian community means that you are going to give, and specifically it means that you will tithe, because that is the norm for all followers of Jesus. There is no arm twisting, there are no guilt trips, no words about dues or obligations, no appealing to selfish motivations like give to God and God will give to you. I've been reluctant to say this over the years, but not anymore. I've had it with stewardship drives. I've had it with receiving letters from the pastor. I've had it with campaigns and appeals and emphases and programs and standing before the church with hat in hand pleading for money. And though you have not said it, you think it. The gospel before us this morning is short and sharp. And it did not include, it wasn't included in the words which Sue read for you. It is these words of Jesus. Listen carefully. For everyone who has, more will be given, and they will have it in abundance. But from those who have not, even what they have will be taken away. These words are Jesus' commentary on the parable of the talents. And if you could read those words without thinking, now wait a minute, something is wrong here. Do you have a problem with what Jesus said, that those who have more, you're going to get even more, and those of you who have little, you're going to get even less? Does anyone have a problem with that? When I read this, it seems that Christ isn't being very Christ-like. I mean, when I hear these words, this is precisely the problem with the world. That the rich get bigger and bigger pieces of the pie, while the poor and powerless and disenfranchised get a smaller and smaller sliver. So why in the world would Jesus say such a thing, which on the surface seems so out of character from everything else that Jesus has said? For everyone who has, more will be given. Well, here's my attempt at interpreting that. I think he means that no one, absolutely no one, is empty-handed. But this isn't how we see it. We always think in terms of other people who have something more. Pavarotti has it, we don't. Aaron Rodgers has it. Maybe Tom Brady. Tom, we don't. Tom Hanks has it. We don't. Presidents and premiers have it. We don't. Spiritual masters certainly have it, and we don't even come close. Even there are those who say pastors have it, but the person in the pews don't. But it's totally wrong. Because you see, God gives gifts to everyone. In 1 Corinthians 12:4, Paul says there are varieties of gifts and varieties of activities and varieties in service, but it is the same God who inspires them all. Now listen to this, in everyone. Not just a select few, but these are the gifts that are activated and motivated in everyone. Every Christian is given a task and the tools with which to do it. One of my favorite films from years ago was called My Left Foot. I don't know if any of you ever saw it. It's about a poor Irish kid who had three strikes against him. He was deformed, he drooled constantly, and he was branded an idiot. He had no way to get around, so his family had to haul him in an old coal wagon. Everyone looked at him as the village idiot. But eventually, this poor kid learned how to write with his left foot. And they discovered that this seemingly helpless, handicapped kid was a genius. contrary to the appearances, this young man was incredibly gifted. You probably remember me saying that I have never missed a high school or college reunion. And I know that's not the norm for most people, but I always have a ball at them. Yeah, I used to go and take solace in knowing that I did not look as old as the rest of my classmates, but the most recent reunion tells another story. Let me take you back to my 35th reunion from Manchester College. I saw a classmate who had not come back since graduation. Back in the 70s, we called him Air Force George. The only coat he wore was an Air Force flight jacket. He was a rather eccentric kind of guy that pretty much kept to himself and marched to his own drum. And I recognized George immediately because he was wearing a flight jacket, but this one of much better quality than the one he wore earlier, 35 years ago. "What have you been up to, George?" I asked. "Oh, I've done a variety of things." "Okay, such as?" And he said, "I am currently the constituent relations manager for the New York State Senate. I was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. I was on special military support teams for President Carter's visits to Alaska. I was part of the Carter administration and accompanied the family whenever they went overseas. I was the military photographer for President Reagan's 1985 inauguration. For the last 7 years, I've had a hobby. I've been a staff writer for the Daily Reporter newspaper in Wellsville, New York. What about you, David?" "Well, I got myself a Master's of Divinity degree, and I preach sermons once a week and try to help out where I can, you know, that kind of thing." You know, 35 years ago, we couldn't see beyond the flight jacket and the eccentricities of George. We didn't see his ample gifts. And Paul said, "For each there is given a manifestation of the Spirit for the common good." We all have it, but we don't act on it. We really don't believe it. And I wanted to focus in a little more clearly on the aspect of blessings here. I came across what Pastor Barry Johnson called a blessings inventory. And I want you to listen carefully as to how you would answer these questions. Are you free to invest your energies wherever you see fit? Are there governmental restrictions denying you the right to stretch your mind and soul? Do you have to worry about the source of your next meal? What about your wardrobe? Does your wardrobe change with the seasons? Do you have a closet to protect the clothes that are out of style or are seasonally inappropriate? Have you ever made it a point to chart your luxury of fun? What percentage of your income goes to good times? How easy is it to go to a movie, or play a round of golf, or go on vacation? I think many of us would respond in a very definite way, because we are all blessed beyond our deserving. But you know, it doesn't stop here. The gifts that God gives carry great responsibilities. To whom much is given, Jesus said, will much be required. No one is empty-handed, which leads us to a second consideration, and that is the motivations that inspire us and the decisions we make reveal the values we embrace. I read a book several years ago with a wonderful title. It's called Teaching a Dead Bird to Sing. It was written by a Trappist monk who had spent most of his life in silence. And in a radio interview, and he spoke in the radio interview, in this radio interview, he said, "Very often what we think is our God does not function as our God." Let me repeat that. Very often we think what we think is our God does not function as our God. What we do hour by hour and day by day indicates who our God really is. Where your treasure is, Jesus said, there will your heart be also. I love stories about expeditions to the Arctic and the Antarctic, probably because there's a lot of snow and ice in them. But there was a tragic story that began in 1845. For it is in that year, with 138 officers and men, that Colonel John Franklin left England in search of the Northwest Passage through the Canadian Arctic to the Indian Ocean. They sailed in two boats. Each boat had an auxiliary steam engine and a 12-day supply of coal. Even though they knew the expedition would take between 2 and 3 years to complete. Rather than load more coal into each vessel, each one had a 1,200-volume library, an organ, 138 china place settings, cut glass goblets and sterling silver flatware. They had ornate silver knives engraved with the officers' initials and their family crest. It was like sailing with Martha Stewart. They had no clothing that was adequate for the brutal cold they would encounter, just their standard Navy uniforms. The expedition started but was never heard from again, and years later, stories about the Franklin expedition circulated. Their boats were locked in pack ice, and Eskimos reported seeing living and dead members of the party. They were seen pushing and pulling a wooden life vessel. A tent was found with 30 frozen corpses. Over the span of 20 years, search parties found skeletons spread over a wide area. When the supplies were exhausted, those who were left carried the provisions with them and went on to look for help. A cluster of their bodies was found, and there was evidence of cannibalism. This is what they took with them. Stuffed into their coats were sterling sets of flatware. One of them carried a backgammon board. A lone skeleton was found far from the ship. It was that of an officer adorned in his dress blues uniform, braided with silk. Over the uniform, he wore a navy blue coat, and around his neck he had the wonderful warmth of a black silk handkerchief. The decisions we make reveal the values we embrace. Your house is on fire. And you have 2 minutes to get what is most precious to you. Do you grab the family photos or your 80-inch flat screen television set? Do you go for the family Bible that has been with your family for 5 generations? Or do you go for the jewelry and the china and the rods and the reels? How would you spend the rest of your life if you knew you had but 1 year to live? Would you spend it with friends and family and tie up all the loose ends and share what you meant to one another and turn your gaze to eternal things? Or would you go on a whirlwind vacation having as much fun as you possibly could? Wherever your treasure is, Jesus said, there you will be also. Oh, you don't need me to tell you this. I mean, you hear it every year that we are blessed by God beyond our knowing. We are stewards who have been entrusted with resources from God for God's glory, for God's kingdom, for the empowerment of the church and sharing God's love made known in Jesus Christ with those who cross our paths. And so we come to one immovable, immutable, there's a good word, law. What we do not use, you know the rest, we lose. What we do not use, we lose. Gifts from God aren't intended for storage units. The gifts of God are not meant as badges of honor. For what good is a beautiful voice if you don't sing? What good are athletic abilities if you never get into the game? What is the use of the spiritual gift of compassion if it's not shared with those who are broken and suffering? So you see, God's gifts do not have a long shelf life. To do good, they have to be put to work. And in this parable of the talents, short and sharp, Jesus tells us of servants 1 and 2 who took the talents entrusted to them and they invested them wisely. Servant 3 only got 1. The rest of them doubled their investments. Number 3 didn't have the nerve. And so he buried it in his backyard. And when the master returned, he says, "Here you go. It's all yours. It's safe and sound." You see, the problem was that the manager wanted him to invest it all. He wanted him to take a risk, but servant number 3 was a chicken. And so many of us are chickens when it comes to investing what God has given us, whether that be of our time or our special gifts that God has given us, and yes, our money. With nothing to show, the third servant was taken away, as Jesus said, and divided among 1 and 2. For to everyone who has will more be given, and from those who have not, even what they have will be taken away. A musician stops practicing. She can play the music in her head, but when she puts her fingers on the keyboard, the music isn't there. And so the question that faces us this morning is one of motivation. What is your motivation for giving? If giving a pledge to Lincolnshire for its ministries in 2017 is to remain in God's good graces, or if it's intended to further guarantee your ticket to heaven, if you are giving to merely pay the budget, pay staff salaries, and keep the sanctuary at 74 in the summer and 76 in the winter. If you are giving in order to have a pleasant Sunday experience, and make sure that we have others in place to do the work given to us all, then keep your pledge. Stick it back in your pocket. Put it in your purse. We don't want it. Anyone from the steward say, "Now, wait a minute! You can't say that." Well, I'm going to retire. I can say whatever I want. I've been wanting to say that for years. If we're not giving with the right motivation, why give at all? Because we're talking about something very precious, people. We're talking about the investment of our lives. Now, I don't mean what I said. It's pastoral hyperbole. Yeah, we need those pledges. But we need them given for the right reasons. We give because we have been given to by God, measure upon measure. We give because not one of us comes here today empty-handed. We come because the decisions we make reveal the values we embrace. We give because what we do not use, we lose. Let us pray. Oh God, here we are again. It's fall. It's time to read a letter, and it's time to think about what to put on a pledge card for what's going to happen or what we hope will happen to the church in the coming year. For some of us, the numbers we write on that card represent our very best. Others of us aren't quite sure because we continue to wrestle with our priorities and struggle with what comes first. And we wonder whether or not we have put second-rate things in first-rate places. Oh God, as we prepare to give our indications of giving for this next year, may we do so with a special sensitivity to the importance that that act reveals. That though it is symbolic, the symbols mean so much because they indicate what we love and who we serve, and whether or not we want to be available to be used by you to build this kingdom for which the world longs so desperately. God, thank you for the decisions and the prayers that went into writing on these cards. And we pray that you will bless them as we give them to you. Amen.